Okay, Shalom Aleichem, a good tevach. We are, Be'ezra Hashem, we're in Chorvitz Halavavis. I'm back to Chorvitz Halavavis. We're still in the Sicha, in the preface. If you move along, after you have Tchilas HaMasheni Shlishi Revi HaMishi Shishi Shvi Shmini Chi Asiri, then you have Umitoy Elis. Okay? Page 358 in English, Yashar Koach.
After the alchemist, right?
After the alchemist, yeah. Okay. So we were on a bit of a tangent, or we were on a double tangent. We were talking about Hanukkah the last few weeks. But before that, the Chavos Halevavos had gone into this whole contrast between the benefits that Bitachon provides and the benefits of a person who, an alchemist, a person who knows how to turn anything into gold. But now we're moving on. We're moving on. We're coming back to the discussion of why do you need Bitachon for your spiritual life? Soon he's going to go to what are the benefits that it provides in your material life. But right now he's discussing what are the benefits that it provides in your spiritual life. So just to recap what we've seen earlier, briefly, was number one, you need Bitachon for your spirituality simply because Hashem expects it of you. That's the most basic reason. That's the most basic reason we need Bitachon. Hashem expects us to trust Him. If we have a proper understanding of who He is and a proper understanding of His involvement in our life, He wants us to trust that He is taking care of us in the best way possible. And then we saw the other thing was that two other points, I'm going to recap them briefly, was that a person doesn't feel the need to be a people pleaser. When a person has bitachon, he's not worrying about, well, if I say this, will it anger this one? If this is what Hashem wants, I'm going to do it. I don't care whose feathers it's going to ruffle. And this enables one to remain on a pure track of Avodas Hashem without having to worry about what act. The only consideration that I have is what does Hashem want me to do? I'm never making the cheshbon of, will it upset this one? Will it anger that one? Will it look funny, etc.? Because he's not concerned about other people's effect on him. And then we saw that also, a person with proper bitachon is able to let go a lot of his material concerns. Again, we keep on adding that caveat with doing the expected ishtadlus, but he's able to let go of a lot of headspace, which worried about this, worried about that. No. My needs, I'm putting into Hashem's hands. I'm clearly defining for myself what are the things I need to be doing. And other than that, my headspace is dedicated to Hashem's service. That's recapping what we've been seeing in the weeks preceding the whole alchemy piece. Now we're going to move on. Some more benefits that Bitachon provides for our ruchnius, for our spiritual life. So, mitayeles ha-bitachon ba-Hashem. Now, with this coming one, is going to starkly remind us that this shiur didn't start with me. It started with Rav Milunowitz Zatzal, and this one is going to remind us of him. Mitoeles habitochen b'Hashem be'inyan haTorah. Another benefit that bitochen provides us with spiritually is ki abotech b'Hashem. When a person has bitochen, imu bal mamon, that when he has money, yimaher lohitzi choyves ha'elikim v'choyves b'nei adam imamoynoi, he will quickly and easily spend his money on what Hashem expects or on his obligations toward people. Benefesh chafetzo v'ruach nediva, with a magnanimous attitude. He's not nervous about letting go of money. Meaning as follows. Very often, our financial considerations will get in the way of our halachic performance, our spiritual performance. There are many areas where Torah and Mitzvahs place financial demands on us. Just think in a simple sense. Eating kosher is much more expensive than eating not kosher, right? So all of us, Baruch Hashem, are on the level where that's not any sign for us. We're obviously spending more money on the kosher food. You can have people who would be in a place where, no, it's difficult for them. It's hard for them to really commit to a properly kosher lifestyle because that demands more money on their part. So this is an example of where we do it easily because by us, it's a no-brainer. It's a given. Yes.
Today, though, we told me at different levels do we spend more money on kashrus that's more mehudar?
That's right.
So
you bring out a good point that the concept, even this example, could be relevant to us in terms of how much money we'll be willing to spend on more hidur. It's true. And this is relevant in many different areas, right? The Jew will have to spend a lot of money on matzahs before Pesach. And here also the question is, will you cut corners? It's very relevant, different levels of hidurim, arba minim on sukkahs, tzedakah, right? It's tzedakah. And also, simply when it comes to even just much more basic, paying back debts and things like that. Am I going to delay, push off, make shtick? Because it's always hard to let go of another $100. It's always hard to let go of another $100. Or do I say, I have bitachon, I don't have to worry about it. If once I know that Hashem wants this, then I'm going to let go and let Hashem worry about it. There's a premise here. There's a very important premise here that we should really articulate. As we're going to be discussing as we go along, the difference between the person with bitachon and the person without bitachon is not whether you do ishtadlis or not. Ishtadlis, proper ishtadlis, responsible ishtadlis, is an expectation of every person. And we're going to be discussing that, how the two come together, what they do. We're all expected to do ishtadlis. And that's not where the difference between a person with bitachon and without bitachon lies. And that, therefore, the question that's often asked, where do you draw the line between bitachon and ishtadlis, is often misplaced because the implication is kind of like there's a place for ishtadlis and there's no bitachon because there I'm taking care of it. And then there's a place for bitachon and there's no ishtadlis because here I have to let go. It's really not true because as we'll learn, as we're going along, the Chavos HaVavos will very, very much be impressing on us that on the contrary, the chokhmah is, the art of bitachon is to be able to go about your ishtadlis with a feeling of, I'm doing this because Hashem told me I should do this, but really he's taking care of it. And therefore, the often the question is not, if I'm doing ishtadlis, doesn't mean that there's no bitachon. Where do you apply bitachon? Where do you apply ishtadlis? But rather the question will be, how should I be going about this ishtadlis? Question?
Well, for example, the Rav often said, when families were struggling to make ends meet, and a woman would come in and say, should I go take a job? And he would say, well, if it's going to make your family functional, that is not a reasonable ishtadlis. That's tough. It's where do you draw the line? How much ishtadlis shows bitachon and how much is over ishtadlis?
So we will get to that. That's why I said it's largely misplaced when we ask where to draw the line, because the truth is that most often the two go in tandem. But yes, there are areas where you say Hashem only wants you to be doing ishtadlis up until a certain point and not beyond that, because it's going to come at the expense of other things. That we still have a whole shower ahead of us. We're only in the preface. We'll get there, mitzvah Hashem. But the point that I want to get to right now is that, yes, there will be certain practical implications between the person with bitachon and the person without. And one of them will be that if I'm going about ishtadlis, and ishtadlis, let's use the classic example of ishtadlis, is making money, right? But of course, ishtadlis applies to all kinds of myriads of other areas as well, taking care of your health, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if I'm going about ishtadlis because, not because I feel like it's up to me, but because, no, I know it's up to Hashem, but Hashem wants me to do it, which is the attitude we should have. Hashem wants me to do this, right? Then, when I know that here Hashem doesn't want me to do that ishtadlis, I should be able to just let go. And this is where there will often be a practical difference between the person with bitachon and the person without bitachon. Let's use an example that won't be relevant to us, just in order to illustrate the point. I have the opportunity to make. I'm very, very tight financially, and I have the opportunity to make a great deal that will really set me up for the next 10 years comfortably. But it involves driving on Shabbos, right? So everyone sitting here will understand that driving on Shabbos is nothing to talk about, right? But it's not just a question of, no, you still can't drive on Shabbos. But the way to approach it is, 1 minute, trying to get that money is a matter of Ishtadus. Why am I doing that Ishtadus? Because Hashem wants me to? This is Ishtadus that Hashem doesn't want me to do. And therefore, I'm capable of just letting go. Here's where the bitachon comes into play, right? Here Hashem says, 1 minute, why are you always working for a living? Is it because you depend on yourself, or is it because I told you to? If it's because I told you to, here I'm telling you to stop. Can you let go? That's the big test. That's the big test. And the truth is, we'll see later as we go along, the Chovas says that that is actually one of the reasons why Hashem imposed Hishtadlis on us. There's a little bit of a tangent, but you know, let's say this tangent, even though we're going to get to it later. Here's the question, right? Why? We're all comfortable with the concept that we should be doing Ishtadlis. We're all comfortable with that concept. You know why? Because we don't want to completely let go, right? We don't want to completely let go. And therefore, you have to have bitachon. Hashem takes care of it all. But you still have to do yours. Oh, okay. Right? So, oh yeah, I'm following my predecessor. Okay. Ashrei shezachisi. So, I still have to do mine. Okay. So I'm relieved. I don't have to move myself out of my comfort zone. My comfort zone is that I have to be taking care of my own needs. Right? But let's answer the question. If Hashem is really taking care of it all, why do you need to do Ishtadlus? Why do you need to work for a living? Hashem takes care of it all. Why do you need to do it? So we all understand that the answer is not, well, yeah, Hashem takes care of it all, but you got to be practical. Does Hashem take care of it all, or does he not? Right? So if that's the answer, and this might really be the subconscious answer in many people's mind, this is what we're trying to approve by learning Shara B'Tokh, then really, it's just a form of apikars. It's a form of saying, in theory, Hashem takes care of everything, but in practice, not, and you got to be practical.
Or he delegates it to me. That's my, he takes care of everything, but he's delegated this section to me.
Okay, that you know what? We can work with that formula, but here's still with the understanding that only if he indeed delegated it to you, meaning there might be situations where he'll tell you, no, I want you to let go. So the Chovas HaLevavos tells us that the reason Hashem imposed Ishtadlus on us is very much intertwined with the very reason that he put us into this world. Why did he put us into this world? If we were just a neshama without a body, we'd be perfect. Why does Hashem have to tack on this body that just gets us into trouble? The answer is that the whole meaning of our lives is to be able to prove ourselves with a body. And to be able to prove ourselves when it's not so simple.
To prove or improve?
Prove. And the two go together, the truth is. I didn't mean improve, but that's how you prove yourself, by taking your body and perfecting yourself with a body, right? We're put into this world to deal with the encumbrances of the body and let the neshama shine through. But the point being, we're put into this world in order to be tested. Hashem says, I have a wonderful arena for testing you in all kinds of ways. What's that? I'm going to impose a chiyuv hishtadlus on you, which is going to give you the sense that you have to take care of your own needs. And now I'm going to come and throw you curveballs. I'm going to put a Shabbos over here. You have to take care of your own needs. You're responsible to make a living, right? Now, Shabbos. Are you capable of letting go? If you're not capable of letting go, then don't say I'm doing a Shabbos because you want me to. Say I'm doing a Shabbos because I don't really trust you. It's tough. And you know what? The Chovas HaLevavos wants us to swallow these things and get used to the ideas. And also, when some matter of honesty comes up, when some matter of integrity comes up, Hashem says, yes, you have to make a Ishtadlus, but stop here. 1 minute, stop. What do you mean stop here? I got to bring the money home. Why do you have to bring the money home? Because you told me to do Ishtadlus. Is that why? If so, now I'm telling you, you don't have to do Ishtadlus. But if you say, I can't let go, Hashem, I'm sorry, then don't come and tell me that I'm doing Ishtadlus because you told me to. I'm doing Ishtadlus because I can't rely on you and because I have to take care of it myself. The Chovas HaLevavos is going to spell this out for us later. It's It's a very, very profound and penetrating point.
Well, question. What if you earn money and then you decide there's lots of poor people who need money and you just give away your money to the Kupa or something? You hear of these siddiqui, that money comes in their pocket and no sindru goes out, and they just trust that Hashem is going to refill it.
So I was
not live on that level, but that seems to be
like, right.
When I said before that I was going to get to Rabbi Malinowitz, that's what I was referring to. But no, Chazal tell us, and this is all part of, we really have to understand that the juggles, the balances, are all part of the challenge. Chazal give us formula for these things, and they tell us exactly for the reason that you're referring to. You want to give tzedakah, give tzedakah, but up to a fifth. Not to give more than that, because once again, part of your responsibility is first to see that you yourself are set up. So Chazal give us guidelines for these things. There are halachic guidelines for these things. But on the other hand, right, for the person to be able to say, I can't give any tzedakah because I'm so tight, here, the Torah might be telling you, I want to see you be able to let go a little bit, even though you feel that you're tight, and give that little bit of tzedakah. But no, not to just give everything away. You know, I'll tell this story. I don't know if it's exactly the subject, but it connects. And once it came into my mind, it's worth it. It's always a good idea. This is a story that I think so beautifully brings out the greatness of two of the shining figures of, well, our generation, the latest generation, however you'll define it, Rav Shach and Rav Shimshon Pinkus. There was, Rav Shimshon Pinkus was the Rav Dan of Hakim, and there was some, a boy in his kehillah. I don't know the exact technicalities, but there was some insurance policy that he would be able to cash in on, a significant insurance policy, some claim or something. Now, he was scheduled to get married on a certain date, let's say Tezvav Tevis, okay? And I don't know the technicality, is ask an insurance agent who can maybe explain it, but he would only be able to cash in on the policy if he delayed the wedding. He would have to delay the wedding for some time, and then he'd be able to collect this claim. Significant, a substantial sum. The date was already set, and he wanted to know if he should delay the wedding in order to come claim this policy. So he came to Rav Shimshon Pinkus, and he asked him about it. And Rav Shimshon Pinkus said, absolutely not. There's no such thing as pushing off a wedding. The date that was set for a wedding is divinely guided. It has a lot of auspiciousness. You don't push off a wedding. What about all this money? Nothing doing. It's not a cheshbon. Okay, he got a very, very clear, unequivocal answer, but the boy came out of there not feeling completely at ease with the answer. He came back again. Finally, they say, you know what? Who's going to be in Bnei Brak one day? The other one's going to be in Bnei Brak. Let's go to Rav Shach together. And go to Rav Shach together. So they came together to Rav Shach, and they asked the question, and Rav Shach heard it out, and he said, I don't know what to say. Try this, that. I don't know what to say. I don't know. They left together, and now think of where this boy is right now. He doesn't know what to do with himself. He's completely mixed up. And he's mamish beside himself, completely confused. A couple of days later, he went back to Bnei Brak by himself. He went to Rav Shach himself. He came into Rav Shach, and Rav Shach told him, don't push off the wedding. I understand that it's a sacrifice, but don't push off the wedding. So the boy looked at Rav Shach, like, what changed? Like, now you're clear. 2 days ago, you seemed like you just couldn't, you were stumped. So Rav Shach said, this is so profound. He said, when Rav Shimshon Pinkus was here, I wanted to convey something to him. By Rav Shimshon Pinkus, money is nothing. I wanted to convey that money is something. And money is a consideration. It's a serious consideration and a factor. Now, considering it all, I am still of the opinion that you should not delay the wedding and give up the money. But to Rav Shimshon Pinkus, I wanted to convey that for him, he's on a level where money is nothing. I wanted to convey that, no, money is something. That is a maisa that for me brings out the greatness of both of these figures. The sublime level of Rav Shimshon Pinkus on the one hand, and the responsibility of a real manik v'Yisrael on the other hand. Okay. So how does this connect? You figure it out. Okay. back to our point. So yes, Hashem imposes upon us the responsibility of Ishtablis, but at the same time, Hashem is saying to us, but I do expect you to be able to let go as soon as I say so. I want you to prove that you're only doing it in good faith to me by doing it when I expect it. But when I don't, you just let go and say, okay, here, I'm leaving it for Hashem. How do we know where that point is? So one guideline of that point is Shulchan Aruch. And for example, we do know, in a general way, we often know where that point is. There are the confusing points, which that, the gray areas will say that if we don't always get those right, we're okay. And we'll work on those gray areas as we go along. But right now, I'm talking about the not gray areas. The not gray areas are the areas where it's clear what the Torah expects of you. Right now, the Torah does want you to not make the deal in order to keep Shabbos, right? Or does not want you to make the deal in order to stay honest, et cetera, et cetera. In those situations where it is clear, and those are many, many such cases we're doing automatically because we are on a high level. We have to appreciate that. We are spending a lot of money when we can't afford it because we are on that level. But let's appreciate that it's not just about spending the money on mitzvahs. It's about demonstrating to Hashem that when you want me to let go of my money, I'm ready to let go of it. Somebody was talking to me about, it was before Sukkot, and he was going to be moving shortly afterwards. So he said, is it so bad? He didn't want to buy schach. He was discussing me the technicalities of schach on his porch. He said, is it so bad? This year I won't eat in the sukkah. He didn't want to buy schach when next year he's going to move anyways, and you have to reconfigure the schach, right? So is it so bad if this year I eat in my house? I'm not going to buy schach, then I'm not going to have what to do with next year. So I said to him, 1 minute, the exact same cheshbon. Matzah for all family doesn't cost that much more money than schach. Why should you buy matzah this year if you're not going to be able to use it next year? Right? You're spending a lot of money because this is what Hashem wants you to be doing right now. So, and you know what? I referred to Rav Milinowitz back in the beginning. His relationship with money was something astounding. I just, you know, this is why I almost feel like a midget when I think about that. For him, money was like a pen. Right. If you need to write something, nobody's busy figuring, should I use the pen for this? Maybe I don't have to use the pen. Maybe I have a different way of getting it done. I can scratch with my fingernail. What about thing? Nobody thinks that way, right? If you need to write something down, you use your pen. For him, money was like a pen. Right? Something needed to be done. You need to push something. Sometimes you push with your hand. Sometimes you push with money. You need to move something. Sometimes you move it this way. Sometimes with money. Right? It was just like, it was so, and here's where your question would come into play, because I don't know where he drew the line.
Yeah.
But so many times when I saw him in situations where, oh, okay, fine. So it was only at a later point that I realized, you know, the truth is that I did think at some point that maybe he I don't know, you know, some people have these like funds that they're living off, you know, some inheritance or something like that. He didn't have that. He didn't. He needed money just like the rest of us need money. But somehow or the other, like he would throw these things out just like nothing. I remember maybe some of you were there at the Malava Malka that the shul made, and he was talking about learning on Friday. You remember that? He was talking about learning on Friday, and he just said, you come to shul to learn on Friday. You know, many people are not working then. Your wife is going to say she needs you at home. Oh, I'll pay for the help. Just on the spot. It was like off the cuff. It wasn't like, you know, think about it. So I'll pay for the help. Contact me. He was serious. He did these things on a regular basis. Remember when he offered the Daf Shavua, I was learning Masechta Megillah. He said, anybody who learns the Yerushalmi alongside it, I'll give him an art scroll Yerushalmi. People assumed, well, he works for art scroll. He has access to these things for free. It's not true. He had that's right. So many of the shiurim that had to be funded, he simply paid straight out of his own pocket. Afterwards, he'd figure it out. So this was an example of a person who, Abadach Bashem, he was the man of Bitachim, right? Abadach Bashem. When a person is really living with the fact that Hashem takes care of things, so money, it's easy for him to part with it when it's being done in the context of Otzon Hashem. So, okay, we're coming back to the point. The point that this is one of the benefits that Bitachon provides you with, the ability to part with money easily, because otherwise it's hard. It is hard to part with money. It's hard to part with money. We say that as a reality, right? We say that not as like a, not making fun of ourselves when we say that. The Tanya says that tzedakah, each mitzvah enhances a certain part of your body on the spiritual level. Everything about the neshama corresponds to the physical body. everything, including the hairs, the pores of the hairs. But he says, tzedakah corresponds to the whole body. It enhances the whole body because all of your faculties are involved in making that money. Making money is an intense business, and it's hard to part with it, right? All of your faculties is involved in making that money, and therefore, the tzedakah that you give, if you can then part with it, that enhances, it has the spiritual effect on your whole body, from head to toe. That's what the Tanya says. And here's what, this is where Bitachon is meant to get us, that ability to show my faith in Hashem by saying, now you want me to let go, I'm going to let go. What will happen afterwards? I'll deal with that afterwards. You'll take care of it more accurately. Now, that's if the person has money. And if a person doesn't have money, so how does he approach that? This is also something that we are allowing the Chavis Halavas to push us hard to higher ways of thinking. If you don't have money, he says, then the way you think of it is that not having money is actually a benefit. Why is that? Having money brings on a lot of spiritual responsibilities. When a person has extra money, he has to justify that towards Hashem if he doesn't want it to be at the expense of his schar, or even more than that, if he wants his money to be a means of generating more schar, so you have to justify it. It comes with a lot of responsibility. And when a Baal Bitachon is not blessed with money, he says, you know what? It just makes my life simpler. It's both on the spiritual and on the material level. And on the spiritual level, I don't have to worry about justifying it. I don't have to worry about all the spiritual responsibility that it casts on me. And on the material level, I don't have to be all busy with the involvement that it entails. Okay. Fine. So that's that point. That bitachon, when a person has true bitachon, he is more easily able to part with his money for Hashem's will.
I'd say that's pretty simplistic. If a person has no means, is what this translates to, and they are worried about how they're going to pay the mortgage next month, whatever, I think that's a lot of stress.
Right. I mean, I don't think that that's what the Chavis Halavas means.
He means you have enough means to get by, but not extra money.
That's right. I don't think I think he's talking about being affluent, being well-to-do versus not being well-to-do. Having not enough money is a separate subject that needs to be addressed much more deeply. Yeah, that's clear to me, because like you're saying, not having enough money is not just lack of responsibility.
Right.
The stress is something very significant. So we'll get to that. Right. Okay. Next, and this is what is the next spiritual benefit that Bitachon provides you with? Is that this is really a continuation of the previous point. When a person has bitachon in Hashem, leim no'eru roiv hamamon mitach b'Hashem. The money doesn't get in his way of trusting Hashem. Now, we actually alluded to this earlier, but the Chavis Halavas is coming from another money angle, but he's bringing out a different point. I'll illustrate it like this. Reb Chatzko Levenstein was with a legendary Mashgiach Lubavitch. So one time he was a very, very serious person, austere, serious person. And it was rare to see him smiling. He was always extremely focused, extremely serious. And one time, one of the other Rabbanim in the yeshiva bumped into him. He seemed to be in an elated mood. And he said, what happened? Right? So he said, lately, the Panovicherov was the Rosh Yeshiva, he was the one who paid the salaries, is struggling to provide the salaries. He said, for a long time, the yeshiva had been on easy street. The salaries were just coming on a regular basis. And I started feeling like my money is a given. And it was I was starting to feel like my sense of relying on Hashem for my money was starting to be a little bit dulled. He said, as of the last month or two, the Panovich Rav is struggling, and I have really revived my feeling that I'm in Hashem's hands when it comes to money. Okay, so this is something very sublime. But it's the point, this is the point the Chavetz Chaim wants to convey here. When we are set up materially, we tend to, you know, there's, I'll put it this way. There is a little window where, for most of us, I think people are on our level. There's a little window of where we can really experience bitachon on our level. And then when you move a little bit more to the right, you lose it. And you move a little bit more to the left, you lose it. Meaning like this. When you pretty much have what you need, but you're not sure if it's all there exactly or how this piece is going to be covered, it's much easier to feel like, okay, I'm going to rely on Hashem. Hashem will take care of this. When everything is in place, Hashem doesn't necessarily enter your mind because everything's fine right now. When everything is in shambles, it's much more difficult to connect to the feeling of that Hashem will take care of it. That's where we're challenged, right? But it's when, I'll call this our starting point. This is where we can start from. Where is it easier for us to invoke the feelings of Bitachon? When it doesn't demand too much of us. I'm not saying this in a way of putting us down. On the contrary, I want to approach this. I'm trying to bring it home, make it something approachable. Let's try to think of it in those terms. When you're pretty okay, but not sure about certain pieces, in a sense, that's the ideal situation to be in when you really want to work on Bitachon. Because it's not demanding too much of you. It's not demanding too much of a leap. It's not requiring you to shoot higher than you're really holding, right? And on the other hand, it's relevant. It's relevant. In the worst case, if it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world, but it is a concern, and it gives me room to comfortably relegate it to Hashem, right? But where are we challenged? We're challenged when it moves a little too much this way or a little too much that way. And the Chavetz Chaim is focusing right now on the that way. When everything is in place, and it's been that way for a while, the challenge is to still feel dependent on Hashem. The challenge is to still feel dependent on Hashem. This is what I refer to as the other side of the coin of Bitachon. Everybody has to be working on the Bitachon. What does a person do if everything's okay? Right? If everything's okay, then there's a whole different dimension of Bitachon you have to be working on. You have to have what you need and feel that it's only from Hashem. Feel that you depend on Hashem for it. Feel that if I'm healthy today, Baruch Hashem, everything is fine today, I need Hashem to continue that tomorrow, and to continue that next week. This is a challenge. That's what the Chavetz Chaim says. Question? Oh, that's what the Chavetz Chaim says, that Ha'oisha mitzad echad, Ba'oini mitzad echad. Everything is a double-edged sword. Everything has two sides to it. Having what you need is a nisayon, and not having what you need is a nisayon. So whatever areas we do feel that we're okay, the demand is have bitachon there too. What does bitachon mean? Bitachon means feeling that I'm in Hashem's hands. And was that? Being grateful is definitely a chashuva function of bitachon because it's not self-understood. I understand that I rely on Hashem to provide it for me, and that's right. When a person has proper bitachon, when a person really feels like I have a good parnasa, it's not because I'm so skillful at what I do, but it's because Hashem created this arrangement for me. So, yes, I need Hashem to continue it. I'm very grateful for the fact that He gave it to me every day.
Think about Bernie Madoff, you know, all the Jews who had fortunes and they invested with Bernie Madoff and then they had nothing.
That's a very, very painful and practical example of how was what just mentioned here was the example of that person who many had invested with and then all of a sudden it turned out that he had pulled one over them. People who Mamish felt like they were completely set up, right? Well-founded. And suddenly it turned out in an instant that they had nothing. So this is the call of Bitachon. In whatever area of life, you are comfortably set up. You know, the truth is that there's halacha, that before you eat, you should give a tefillah for your mezainis. You should daven that you should have enough to eat before you sit down to eat. That's why many say, before every meal, Mizmor LeDavid. Everybody says it at Shalosh Shuzis, but it actually is brought down by the Poskim. It's a good idea to say it before every meal. It's a certain expression. Mizmor LeDavid contains in it that that's what it expresses. That understanding that I have all kinds of potential problems surrounding me, but Hashem is guiding me along on a secure path. So Dafka, when I see breakfast in front of me, I sit down and say, Hashem, allow me to get the food I need today. Question?
Right now we're talking about the Bitachon, that it's like you said, if we have, now we're asking Hashem to continue it. Or if we're on the borderline, then...
Let me tweak that a little bit.
That wasn't my question, though.
Okay, go ahead.
My question is, where does the Bitachon come in that Hashem couldn't say no?
Okay, right. So here we're flipping back and forth between both sides of the coin. The Bitachon is the understanding that, let's keep boiling it back down to the roots. The essence of Bitachon, the formula of Bitachon is, I am in Hashem's hands. Now, that can have implications in both directions. If everything is fine, it's not because, well, why shouldn't it be? It's because I'm in Hashem's hands and He's taking care of me. If things don't seem fine, well, I'm in Hashem's hands, and that means that I am well taken care of. Whatever is going on is, like we said before, the best possible scenario for me. So it's all really the same point. When I have what I need, right now I have what I need, so it's with that clear understanding that Hashem is giving this to me now, I'm very conscious of it, and I feel dependent on Hashem, even as I have it. Now, when I'm considering the possibility of maybe at a later point I won't have it, which is basically what you're asking, what if Hashem decides to say no? Then I'm thinking that, again, Hashem is carrying me. He's going to be doing for me the best thing possible. If He decides that at a later point it's better for me not to have it, then I'm going to try to prepare myself to move into that mindset also. But that's really the point here. When things are lacking, to be able to say to myself, this challenge is something that Hashem decided is best for me now. And that's the concept of Hashem saying no. When Hashem says no, it's not just that He says, sorry, I can't give this to you now, I have other people to give it to. When Hashem says no, it's that Hashem is saying, for you right now, this is the best experience for you that you can go through, and use it to connect to me. Use it to connect to me. Be able to feel in this situation too, that you're in my hands and I'm moving you through something painful and I'm hurting along with you. I'm hurting along with you, but I'm doing it because this is the best thing for you now. And it's going to bring you to the best place that you can be. You know, the famous mashal that I don't think comes from Jewish sources, but it brings out the point, right? The footprint poem, the famous footprint poem. I think everybody's familiar, right? But that's, I don't think it comes from Jewish sources, but it's bringing out a true point. That the idea is to be able to feel, I'm in Hashem's hands. When He's giving it to me, I thank Him. When He's not, I say, okay, Hashem, you're putting a call on me. You're putting a challenge on me. Help me respond to it right. Help me respond to it right. And you know what? The truth is, when a person does have what they need, it is a good idea to keep conscious of that. This is what Hashem set up for me now. I pray that He'll continue to set up for me, but I understand that He'll make the decision. And you know what? I want to take advantage of the time now when things are okay to ask Hashem, let me feel how You're taking care of me. And let me use it to fortify myself for whatever I might be feeling at any point. Whatever I might be feeling at any point. But this is the point that the Chavos HaMavos is making here the point that Bitachon gives you that ability also. That when you do have what you need, it doesn't obscure your vision. It doesn't block you from seeing that Hashem is the one taking care of you. And on the contrary, this is mamash the point that was raised here. When I have a lot of money, it's not that I feel like, now I don't have to worry for the time being. I don't rely on that money. I don't feel like it's my cause for security. The way I view the money I have, maybe I have $10 million in the bank. I don't. But maybe I have $10 million in the bank. And maybe I've had it for the last 20 years. But still, the way I relate to it is, this is sublime. This is when we're talking for a very wealthy person comes into play. The way I relate to it is, Hashem handed this to me. He didn't tell me exactly what for. Right? He didn't tell me exactly what for. He allows me to dip into it when I want to buy food. But he didn't tell me if he's giving this to me. Is he giving it to me to just hold on for a certain period? Does he want me to pass it on to someone else? He didn't tell me that. So that's how he views his money. Hashem says, takes that bundle. I say, here, hold on to this. Okay, you told me to hold on to it. I need supper tonight. Can I use it? Yeah, you can use it for supper. And I'll let you know as we go along what its purpose is. That's how he views his money. The way he relates to it. There are inspiring stories. Like most of the stories, the inspiring stories we hear are about Gedolei Yisrael.
Yeah.
But you know what? There are very inspiring stories about some of those very wealthy people who showed what it means to be an Eved Hashem in wealth. Something that really deserves some time also to study. But he's laying down the attitude. Hashem gave this to me to hold on to. He's giving me certain instructions, what he wants me to do with it. It isn't mine. And Hashem is telling me, I'm giving it to you for a certain amount of time. Well, for how long? I'll let you know. This is how he views his money. This is what Bitachon is supposed to do for the person who has the money. Now, as long as he has the money at him, Hashem says, you can use it for supper. You can also use it to pay your rent. He's probably not paying rent. But whatever it is, right? As long as he has it with him, lo yivad ba'avuroi, it doesn't cause him to kick, meaning this is an expression for when a person says, Hashem, I'm fine now. I'll be in touch with you. I'll get in touch if I need your help with something. No, he remains as intensely connected with the understanding that, no, I'm not fine without Hashem. It's not like now I'm okay and I'll be in touch if I need you. No, I need him now also. And right now, he just gave this to me to hold, right? Okay. We're in mid-sentence here. We'll have to continue this Blin Eder next week. We'll stop for now, and if there are any questions, we'll take them. We'll take them now. If there are no questions, then, as I usually say, don't feel awkward. That's also fine. Okay, Agute Vach.
Thank you very much.
Into you.